724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 1230 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn, middle of the week. I was talking with somebody today here at the radio station who said, I've got that weekend feeling already. I said, what? It's Wednesday morning. Well, here's the deal. For a lot of people, and God bless you if you're able to do this, if you have Monday off or you're taking Monday off as a vacation day to make it a super long holiday weekend because the 4th is on Tuesday, yeah, I guess you could be getting a little bit of that weekend feel already, even though it's Wednesday afternoon. We have a good show today. We've been all over the ballpark already this week, have we not? Yesterday, talking about UFOs and extraterrestrials. This is the 70th anniversary of the incident at Roswell, New Mexico. Everybody's heard of that. Yeah. Last week of June, 1947. When it happened, so that's 70 years ago. So anyway, that was great yesterday. Today we have guests with us from Butler downtown. We'll be talking to them in just a moment or so. We're also going to be chatting today about, and this is an issue that's been in the news certainly the past 5 years, I guess, gender identity, gender-neutral bathrooms down in North Carolina. They had a big fuss over their law they passed down there. I guess they've repealed it or adjusted it now. The whole concept has been in the news. We'll be talking with a man who is a professor at Temple University, and we'll be talking about, he proposes that maybe we need to rethink this whole thing about gender-specific restrooms. I don't know. Seems kind of way out there to me, but we'll talk to him. And also today, multitasking on the agenda with guest Emily Wapnick. That'll be later. We say hello, first of all, to Bob Dandoy, who's been on the board, past president, as a matter of fact, of Butler Downtown. Bob, good to see you again.
Always good to see you. Thank you for taking the time.
Also with us is a Butler businessman, Kenny Bonus. Kenny, always good to see you as well.
Good to see you, too.
Businessman already, and now you're starting on a new venture that we want to talk about today. Huh?
Yeah, that's correct. Co-work. Yeah.
Well, we'll find out about that in just a moment or so. We are coming off a pretty big weekend for Butler downtown.
It was.
I had the Brew Fest last weekend. It was fantastic.
It was absolutely fantastic. Saturday, actually the whole weekend, was one of those weekends where, Bob gets on his soapbox and starts ranting and raving at the people, shaking my fist. There's nothing to do in Butler. Say what? Saturday was an amazing day. We had the road race in the morning. The farm market was open. We had the Butler Blue Sox mascot down there. We were giving away free tickets. People were, socializing. We had music there. And then in the afternoon, the Butler Brew Fest that last month when we were on, Ben Smith from Reclamation Brewing joined us. Mm-hmm. And it was a tremendous afternoon. I don't know of anyone that didn't go to that and walk away feeling, wow, that was above our expectations.
Above, literally. It was on the top floor of the parking garage.
Absolutely,
is where
yeah.
It was held.
And that was one of the things, of course, Mother Nature also smiled upon us. My wife and I went, and we were both saying, this is going to be on the top floor of the parking garage in the afternoon sun, baking us. It was a gorgeous day, spectacular sky, blue with some fluffy white clouds, a little breeze blowing up there. They had, I think it was about 20-some different breweries, and over 400 people attended the event. They shot for 400 tickets to sell. And then at the last minute, like the Friday before, they counted. If you've ever been to a Brew Fest, you get a little sampler glass that you go in to sample all the beers. And they had like 35 above and beyond their count of what the tickets they sold. They said, well, let's put those 35 out and sold 35 more tickets in case anybody wants to come. They sold out in like 2 hours. Boom, they were gone, okay? And so there were well over 400 people at the event. And it was, you know, great music. They had three or four different people selling food. It was just a wonderful afternoon. Saw a lot of great people, and it just really, the vibe in downtown Butler was good that afternoon.
And this was the first ever. I mean, sometimes events take a couple of years to get organized, get going, get the word out, and so on and so forth.
And what's really telling is the number of people, if you see it on social media, and I know certainly what I've heard through John and Ben at Reclamation, that are already saying, can't wait till next year, can't wait till next year. So when people are already talking that way, it's going to be even better next year. It was really, and for those of us that are beer aficionados, they had some great brews and some very adventuresome ones, which you always get at a brew fest. You say, what? And some of the ones that were what were some of my favorites. Those guys think outside the box when they're getting ready for one of these.
I have talked with so many people who found out now that we have craft breweries popping up here in Butler.
Yeah.
We have two of them right on Main Street, and obviously many more in the region. And it really kind of puts us on the cutting edge nationally. This is where all the growth is in the beer industry these days.
Absolutely. One of the things that's happened in the beer industry is the smaller breweries are now also getting bought up by the large corporate entities. Mm. So they're kind of looking for that niche market and saying, well, we want to appeal to that too, so we'll buy up this little brewery over here and make it part of the big thing. But these little brew pubs, which is what we have in Butler, those are the things that are really making the mark. And those guys can really, again, think out the box when it comes to craft brews. And so they end up attracting, you know, most of the local breweries is not a place where you just go in and you know, they use the term pound them down. Just have a bunch of beer, you know.
No,
you're going there. It's a quality versus a quantity kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It attracts the foodies. Some of the food at our local brew, at any brew pub, it can be really, really exemplary. And then you're getting that subtle taste that you really, you know, you're looking for in a beer and say, wow, let's really drink this and savor it and enjoy it. And so that's where the whole craft brew thing is going. There's also a huge movement and entities. As a matter of fact, part of the Brew Fest was BASH, it's called, the Butler Area Society of Home Brewers. And home brewing is also a big part of this whole craft brewing movement in the country. So it's really exciting. And yes, I mean, there are some places, like when you go out to Boulder, Colorado, and Portland, Oregon, and a few places like that, it is craft brews through the, you know, little brew pubs through the sky. And to know that, you know, here we are, little Butler, we've got our 2, 3, 4, 5 almost, you know. It's
well, the reason that I mention it, it shows how Butler and Butler Downtown, the organization, is really, they're in the vanguard. They're on the cutting edge of what urban centers are evolving into, with all kind of different diverse things. And lo and behold, I just found out today that Kenny Bonus, already a downtown businessman, accountant, accounting firm, you're launching jointly into another new business.
Yeah, that's correct. We're launching ConnectWork on Main. Today's our soft opening. It's over in the Holly Point building on the second floor.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be the old IRS office, and we've repurposed the area to be a collaborative workspace.
Probably be more welcoming than the office that was there before.
A lot more welcoming. We still have people coming by asking for the IRS. But it's a style of work. Co-working is a style of work where people can collaborate in a shared environment, like-minded individuals who either own businesses, work from home, creative people just looking to network, and even people wanting to meet people. A lot of times it's tough to find meeting spaces, and it's difficult to have that meeting in a Panera Bread at times or a coffee shop because it gets noisy at times. So we offer that professional environment, full collaboration, and potentially an incubator for small businesses looking to get started up.
And Sharing costs would be the first thing straight away I would see as being a big aid to startups.
Absolutely. A lot of times to be able to have an office is extremely expensive and really makes starting a business almost impossible. Mm-hmm. So having a co-work space in your town allows you to share office space with others to lower those overhead costs, to be able to start your business, focus on providing that service rather than worrying about how much rent is per month.
You know, the only thing that I've heard about, it's analogous to this, it sounds like it at least. I've read a couple of stories in Pittsburgh where artists and artisans are doing this, where it's extremely expensive for studio space and so on and so forth. They're kind of going together in a collaborative, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, whenever you're able to just share in those expenses to be able to lower the cost for everybody involved, and people use the space at different times too, so it's not like everybody's using it all at once. Mm-hmm. It really helps with mitigating those very heavy costs. And one of the things that I think is the best about it is I just came from it, and we were in the middle of a social media workshop. So there was a little conference room area where we were holding a workshop, and somebody was explaining how to fully utilize social media. And that was being offered at no cost in that particular session. It's just nice to be able to share information like that, to learn, to educate, and attract people who want to be able to learn and develop like that in the Main Street area.
Well, will the plan be for interested individuals to like sign up for a certain, you know, so many months or something like that? How will that work?
Yeah, we do it on a membership basis. So there is a day pass involved, which is $15 for like a day pass, and that would come with unlimited coffee and Wi-Fi for the day, The essentials and getting work done. And we have a monthly membership that starts as low as $80. So
even just by the month.
Yeah, so for essentially $80, you would have a Monday through Friday 9-to-5 workspace at your disposal to be able to collaborate, to meet with clients, to take phone calls, and get work accomplished in a productive environment. So,
has there been anything like this in Butler before? I'm not familiar with it, if there has been.
There's the Office Link in Holly Point, which is a great service as well. It's more of a separate office area where there's a little bit more privacy involved, but ours is going for that connecting, the networking, to be able to collaborate and pass along ideas and referrals. So it's in the same spirit of being able to rent space, but I think we're really trying to form a good community and culture with what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that kind of ties in with what a few things I've read about some of the real cutting-edge companies. Let's pick Google, for example, where they're workplace and their work culture is drastically different from what most people in America experience. What they wear, the way they interact, the way they take breaks. And what I was thinking is when you mentioned interaction, they do that all day long. That's part of their work culture.
Yeah, and a lot of what we're doing too is like that. We have a lounge area where there's coffee makers going, snacks and everything, so people can kind of wind down and socialize with each other in a separate area. And just anecdotally speaking, there's a colleague of mine in the space right now who works for a big corporation and three days a week gets to work from home. So he may choose to spend his time in the co-work to be able to be surrounded by like-minded people.
I think the thing that's exciting about this too is, and you can correlate it going back to the original way that we started the conversation here, when I look at younger entrepreneurs, Kenny qualifies, Dave. Mm-hmm. the faces that I see, this is the type of work atmosphere that they're looking for, rather than that old school, this is my store, this is my office, you stay out. Yeah. If you remember, you know, Les Nessman on the old WKRP with the tape around his desk, that's his office, you know. It's not that kind of space. And when you look at, like, for example, the breweries, okay, they collaborate with each other. They're friends. You'll see the guys from one of our breweries in the other brew place, you know, stopping by, talking, you know, comparing notes and stuff. There's none of that sort of walls that are built up. And I see that in a lot of businesses. You mentioned Pittsburgh. There's a great space. I want to say it's in East Liberty where it's restaurants. And they have three different chefs that work in that same space, creating food, getting ready to open their own restaurants. So they're looking for that collaboration. And I think it again, speaks well of Butler when we see those young faces and those young entrepreneurs doing that. You know, the point I always try to make is people are looking and they're saying, why can't Butler be like it was when I was a kid, meaning me, you know, my generation. Mm-hmm. Well, it's never going to be like that. But that doesn't mean it can't be really cool and really interesting. And I think some of the things you're seeing are bringing us into that world of a better Butler, but a different Butler.
Oh, I think it's really exciting. Cool. You know, East Liberty is the place. There's something down there called, you're going to laugh at me because I know I don't have it right, it's like Bakery Corner or
Bakery Square.
Biscuitville or something. What was it?
Bakery Square.
Biscuitville. Well, it was an old Nabisco plant, I think, is what it was. And they've repurposed it into just what you're talking about.
Yeah, there's offices and shops and restaurants and grocery stores and everything's all through that area now. And, very much repurposed into those things. Sure.
So what's the official name? Because people, I'm sure a lot of people are hearing about this for the first time as we chat, and they may be interested in contacting you.
Yeah, it's Connect Work on Main. It's kind of a play on words, with the Connect Work being one word. And we're on Facebook. We also have a website, connectworkonmain.com. Mm-hmm. If people are interested, our contact information is on there as well. We pulled the idea essentially from what Pittsburgh's doing, what Erie is doing, and realized that there is a need for this. Times have been changing, and people working from home and requiring some sort of collaboration, especially with new business startups. I think it's fun to see that, and it's a sign of revitalization going on Main Street in Butler. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like the perfect place for it, too. It's very central. It's a hub. And we see it as being something that's going to lead to even more successes down the road.
You have a partner, another local businessman?
Correct. Lance Calvert, who is a part owner of Brushes and Barstools with mm-hmm. his wife, Dorothy. He and I have joined forces on creating this co-work. And it's nice to be able to use his creative side and his ability to build really awesome stuff. And then my background with finances and running a business and doing a business plan. So it's good to have the dynamic going. And a lot of times when you want to get something done, it's good to have two champions to be able to depend on each other and keep each other accountable. So that's the strategy we've been using to move things forward and mm-hmm. continue to look for that type of energy and synergy going forward.
This is the future of urban centers across the country, and hopefully Butler downtown as well. Because, as Bob Dandoy said, Trotman's is never coming back, folks.
No,
and not only that, we chuckle. It's been many, many years now, but people still refer to that as the old Trotman building. It's a motorcycle warehouse, for goodness sakes, and a huge one. But even the model of Trotman's, it's going by the wayside.
Oh, absolutely.
Sears announced they're closing another 20 stores yesterday. They've closed hundreds of them. Joseph Horn, Gimbel's, Kaufman's, they're all gone.
They're all gone.
That
right.
model is passe. It's out the door.
And it's also built on a lifestyle that's very, very different. Just as a small point, one of the things that we're going to be talking about to some of our businesses in the days to come in the downtown area is changing their hours of operation. When you look at that model that you're talking about, the old model for a downtown area was stores open, let's say 9:30, they closed at 5. This was a model that was based on the urban housewife, okay? She was home during the day, the kids went off to school, dad went off to work, and they could go downtown and do their shopping. Mm-hmm. That's not the way it is anymore. People need... women are working. They have their jobs. They're gone during the day. They need that time, perhaps after 5 o'clock, to be able to come downtown. So what we're trying to encourage is some of our businesses, and we're trying to get them organized around this, is to stay open in the evening, let's say till 7:30. So then you're on your way home from work and you want to stop by for meet a friend for a coffee, or stop by the Miller's Meats and get some, you know, a couple of steaks for the evening barbecue. You have that time. You're not rushed to be able to do that and to be able to do more shopping, take the kids for their pair of shoes at Miller's Shoes, you know, that kind of thing, from that time after school, after work, through into the evening. So that's another model. It's based on a different time and a different place.
Yeah, and if you don't adjust, the writing's on the wall. And we're not talking about small independent businesses. If Macy's and Sears and Kmart can't make it.
That's right.
Sticking with the old model, it's not going to happen.
No,
you know,
yeah,
face.
Absolutely. Yeah. Although, you know, there's always the place for the brick and mortar. I mean, we saw the recent acquisition of Whole Foods by Amazon. You know, they're still looking for that also. You know, they're and that's why, and I've said it so many times in the show, these worlds are not exclusive of each other. We've never, ever advocated, you know, and you've heard me say this many times, not to shop at the big box stores. Shop at the big box stores. But look at what's in the downtown area. What are the alternatives that are there that you can avail yourself of in our downtown area that are different? You're not going to get the same food at the Butler Brew Works that you are at one of the chain restaurants. I'm telling you that, okay? Or at the Chop Shop or whatever it may be. It's a very different experience when you go into Jeff Double's All About Reclaimed as opposed to a gift shop somewhere in a mall. You're going to get very different things that you can't get anywhere else.
That's a good time to talk about this because we're coming up on the 4th of July. You know, technically, the name of the holiday is Independence Day. We refer to it as the 4th of July because it's the 4th of July.
When does the 4th of July fall this year?
Bob is channeling Sophie Maslow. You're maybe too young to know that story, Kenny. I don't know. She was a former mayor of Pittsburgh. God rest her soul.
She's a great one.
quite a character. And they were moving the fireworks in Pittsburgh around. You know, if they wanted to do it on a Saturday and it wasn't the 4th, you know, every year it was different. And she finally came out one day and said, the 4th of July is going to be on the 4th of July. In the only way that Sophie could say it.
Yep.
But anyway, Independence Day, and urban downtowns across the country are marking that with special promotions.
Right.
We're going to do it downtown here.
Yeah, we are doing a promotion in downtown Butler called Celebrate Your Independence, but that would be DENTS, celebrating the independent businessman, the local business, focusing on the local business. Now, if you look into downtown Butler, you see that we have again, national chains and things like Rite Aid, Dunkin' Donuts, but we have all of our great independent businesses, which are really the backbone of the community that bring back more jobs, more income, more taxes, all of these things that happen that they return to the community at a greater percentage than some of the national chains do. And so we focus on them during this time, and it begins July 1st to July 8th, very similar to the Shop Small promotion that we always do at Christmas time. We encourage everyone to come into downtown Butler and, you know, check out the local businesses. Several of the businesses will be running their own special promotion, but Butler Downtown will also be giving away a Weber tabletop barbecue grill and some barbecue tools. If you go in and you make a purchase, you can fill out an entry form, throw it in, and Butler Downtown will announce the winner just after the 8th. And again, just one more little thing to encourage you to come on down, have lunch, do some shopping, you know, take advantage, find out what we have to offer.
There are some ancillary benefits as well. Building community, for example. I've always been a big believer in esprit de corps, whether it's your high school basketball team or your hometown.
Right.
Why not?
Right.
You know, it's an important thing. You can help that and financially strengthen the local economy too.
Well, I think that's the thing that we always lose sight of. You know, and I'm the biggest cheerleader in the world about this town that I live in. And, you know, people ask me, why do I do the things that I do? Why am I so committed? And I say, well, honestly, it's because I'm extraordinarily selfish. I live here, all right? Mm-hmm. I want it to be the best place it can possibly be. So I'm a big, huge cheerleader for the downtown area. But one of the things I've learned working with Butler Downtown and the National Main Street Center and the State Main Street, the Pennsylvania Main Street Center, is this powerful impact that local business and our main streets have in our community. You know, our communities, when they ran into problems, they ran into problems from the middle out. And it's sort of like this little cancer that grows. The shops start, you know, disappearing on Main Street. And then they open up out in the suburbs and the outskirts of town. And they're never replaced in the middle, okay? Well, the same way that we have died over the years is the way we will rebuild, by going back to the center, Main Street, and rebuilding that. And then you have those businesses that, again, are employing people, that are paying taxes, that those people that are employed, they also pay their taxes. And of course, if you're employed downtown, you usually do some shopping downtown and you eat lunch downtown. Mm-hmm. And this all has this multiplier effect, is what it's called, that it generates all this money, which then pays for infrastructure improvements. It pays for police. It pays for fire departments. It pays for all these things because it's coming back to the city's taxes. So it's not just a, come on, let's get out there and do, you know, support Butler. There's very practical reasons for doing this also, and I think everybody has to keep that in mind. I've mentioned, and I don't know, I'm going to dig up this stat before I come on the show one time. It's something like $5 out of every 100 of the spending that you do. If you take that $5, set it aside, and say I'm going to spend this in downtown Butler, the impact is amazing. Hmm. So you're spending your $95 at your big grocery store, or the big box stores or whatever, in the malls and shops outside, but you take $5 and you say, I'm going to go downtown. I'm going to spend that there. It's amazing what the impact is of that.
Mm-hmm. We're talking, if you're joining us midstream here, Bob Dandoy has been an officer and board member of Butler Downtown for some time, former president. And local businessman Kenny Bonus, also with us on this segment of the program here today. And we're talking about celebrate your independence, your independent businesses. And this promotion kicks off in a couple of days, I guess.
July 1st through the 8th.
It's this Saturday.
This Saturday, right.
Still getting over the fact that Memorial Day weekend has come and gone, and here we are into July already. Wow. There's some other benefits about shopping locally. You know, it's actually becoming kind of cool to live in urban centers again. Now, in Pittsburgh, they call it gentrification in some areas. They have the Mexican War streets.
Right.
It's on the north side. And the north side used to be kind of a dumpy area. Now it's hot.
No, it's amazing.
Because the stadiums are over there and all kind of new development. And Mexican War Streets is, I mean, that's prime real estate these days.
I did one of the, it's been several years now, but I did one of the house tours on the north side in the Mexican War Street area. And some of the places you walk into and you say, oh, my goodness gracious. It's amazing what people have done with some of those spaces.
But it's becoming, for lack of a better phrase, it's becoming cool.
That's it.
to live in the city again.
Sure.
Whether it's a small city or a big one.
Lawrenceville as another example. And I just saw they announced in the south side of Pittsburgh, which had been the Carson Street area, of course, had always been this party capital of Pittsburgh, you know. But now they're trying to do a couple of other initiatives that's going to make it a little bit safer and a little bit more friendly towards living there, okay? Because before, where it was a great place to go and socialize, that didn't always line up with, I want a nice place to live. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to move in that direction to stimulate that kind of growth there. I think you're going to be seeing that in the Butler area, too. Already people, I've showed them pictures of some of the living spaces that we have on Main Street in Butler. There are some people who get it, who see the potential. They've gone into some of our buildings. They've renovated. They've cleaned them up. There are amazing apartments and things in some of the upper floors of those buildings.
Yeah, and that's only the beginning. I think there's more of that.
Oh, it's absolutely the beginning.
It's not visible sometimes from the outside. Yeah. There are some beautiful, beautiful apartments and living spaces right in the downtown.
Yeah, just anecdotally speaking on this too, a lot of my friends have been moving into the Butler City area because it's affordable. I bought a duplex myself. I rent out the other half, and I live in the one side and have my mortgage paid for free. Mm-hmm. So it's a formula that other people are starting to see. And then when you realize you can just walk right up to Main Street, enjoy a nice dinner, walk back home, and even work on Main Street, like with what we're doing too. It's fun because it's becoming like a central hub, and people are seeing the value in it because it's really not that expensive, and it is what you make it. So it's something else to see a lot of your friends and family starting to move into the city and make it something special.
young businessman, has a plan, lives for free.
That's good. It's good.
Maybe I can swing something like that with my car.
It's called Uber. There's an idea.
Even those are a little bit of a shakedown cruise right now. And you know, the stuff that you see in the news is just amazing. At first I poo-pooed this whole driverless vehicle thing. And, you know, now they're talking about driverless planes. I mean, it's just phenomenal. And I'm not laughing anymore.
It's what a world we live in. And when I look at where we're going just as a community, and it's these baby steps, you know, that we take. But one of my favorite demonstrations was, probably a year or so ago now, I would guess, when Voyager, the spacecraft, was coming to the end of the solar system and was going to shoot out, you know, and it has gone, you know, longer than anyone expected, you know, sending data back and everything. And it was on the program CBS Sunday Morning, and the newscaster was standing in front of a model of Voyager, okay, and he's saying something on the order of, this behind me, okay, what I hold in my hand, and he held up an iPhone, and he said, does, and it's something like thousands of times more powerful and more calculation than this huge monstrosity behind him, you know. Well, that's a nice little metaphor, isn't it? You know, as we look at what we're trying to do as an organization, what young entrepreneurs are trying to do, you know, it's a different world. It's pretty amazing, you know.
And no wonder. It's astonishing, because this week, I think it was Monday of this week, was the 10-year anniversary of the iPhone. It's when it was unveiled by Steve Jobs.
Right.
10 years? Are you kidding me? That's all the longer?
I know.
And now, it's, I mean, there were so-called smartphones before that, but they weren't really smartphones.
Well, you trace it all back to Roswell, you know.
Well, that was 70 years ago. But, I mean, to think what's happened since the, you know, Steve Jobs held up the first iPhone 10 years ago this week. And you think of the development, you know, they've taken over the world, quite frankly.
Sure.
It's
unbelievable. And again, now you use that as a metaphor for what small communities are doing all over the United States, reinventing themselves, trying to approach things in a different manner, like what Kenny and his crew is doing in their space. They never did this kind of thing before, you know. Well, that's, you know, one of the things that I bridle the most when I work with various organizations, the people that sit around the board table or whatever, saying, we can't do it that way. We've always done it this way. Well, sorry, that's not going to fly anymore. We've got to try new ways and new approaches. That model you were talking about, the Troutman, Macy's, Sears model, not working anymore, you know. So we've got to figure out different ways to do things.
And if you get too stressed out even imagining all of this stuff, why not try yoga?
I knew you were going to segue like that. I know you now, David.
Yoga downtown?
This is so much fun. I just think this is a great idea. We have a new business, another new business on Main Street. It's in the former PNC Bank building where Working Man's store is.
I saw the sign the other day.
Right? Yeah, it's a brand new sign. Cool, nice sign, too. Yeah. It's called Yoga on Main. And they're going to be doing, I believe the plan is to do it once a month. And who knows, maybe that again, that will grow, to do yoga in Diamond Park. And I think that's just a great, again, that urban setting that we're talking about. It's not, I know it's not New York Central Park, it's Diamond Park and Butler, but it would be cool to have about, you know, 25, 30 people up there, or more, 100, in Diamond Park doing yoga. It is July 15th, will be the first session at 11 a.m., if you're coming, you bring your own mat, please, and yoga people understand that, and some water, and they're free. You can just come down. And I think it's a great way, too, if you are someone who doesn't do this, but you've always wanted to say, I'd like to try this out.
What's this all about?
There's a way to do it. Yeah, you know, it's a great way to do it.
So unroll your mat and go to – that's a Saturday, right?
It is a Saturday, yes, I believe so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're excited about those little things. And, again, those are the visible things. Give another little shout-out here, the community garden that just went up about a month or so ago. Those are those visible things that we see on Main Street that are telling us that it is alive and that people care. And I think those are two important points. When people are looking, they say, you know, do I want to come into this community and start a business? Do I want to come downtown and live? Well, son of a gun, I think I do. All right. Yoga in the park, a community garden, a nice brew pub, a nice cool little shop, you know, an old mom and pop store. It's all there in downtown Butler. So.
Yoga at one end of Main Street and a community garden at the other.
I know. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
First time I encountered that concept was in Portland, Maine, where they have an area they've set aside on the edge of town where many people go and garden.
Yeah, it's a great concept. Yeah, and I think, you know, instead of having, and that was give all credit where credit is due, Kelly Makita, mm-hmm. who's our chair of our promotions committee for Butler Downtown, she's another one. You know, people ask me, how do I do the things that I do? You know, all the stuff I'm involved in. Well, you haven't met a Kelly or a Kenny or a Lance or a Dorothy, because these people put me to shame, all right? But Kelly was the driving force behind that also, and her logic was simple. There's a big empty lot. We can let it sit empty all summer, or we can do this, which again shows that. Mm-hmm. And how many people showed up to work that thing and get it all put in? And
what an attention getter.
It is.
You can't drive by it without looking at it.
I've said before, we could redo the entire infrastructure of Main Street, but it would never get as many comments as what we used to get when the Shade Tree Commission of Butler hung the plants on the light posts. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, when people would do that, say, that looks so pretty. You could be doing all kinds of other things, but those plants on the light posts would get more comments. You know,
if you want more information on Connect Work on Main, mm-hmm. check on Facebook, right?
That's correct.
And all the contact information and so on is there. You can get in touch with Kenny Bonus and Bob Dandoy, obviously keeping us up to date on lots of things happening downtown, including the promotion called Celebrate Your Independence, your independent merchants, which kicks off this Saturday, July 1st. Yeah.
You got it.
Hey, guys, good to talk with you.
Yeah,
good
great talking with you.
Thank you so much.
Fun. More to come on It's Your Turn. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about this whole concept of gender identity. We're going to explore it from a number of different standpoints, starting with the controversy over bathrooms. And our guest, who's a professor at Temple University, Heath Fogg Davis, suggests that perhaps, I don't know, sounds like it's a little bit way out, perhaps we don't need gender-specific bathrooms anymore. Well, that sounds like something I want to talk to him about. Yeah, we'll get more details. Hey, coming up, and more after that, too. And don't forget, on Monday, I'm just giving you a couple of program notes here. We'll be talking with a man originally from this area, Peter Anno, who has just come back within the past few weeks from Antarctica, of all places. I don't think I've ever talked to anyone who's fresh back from, or can you be fresh back from Antarctica? I'm not sure. That'll be coming up in a few days. Okay, quick break here and then back with more on It's Your Turn on WISR after these words.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Listeners, nice to have you with us on this next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest for this segment is Heath Fogg Davis, who joins us by telephone. The subject is an intriguing one, listeners. Do we still need male and female signs on bathroom doors? Yes, an interesting question. Our guest, Heath Fogg Davis, writes about this and more in his new book, Beyond Trans, Does Gender Matter? First of all, Heath Fogg Davis, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Great. I'm glad to join you.
This is a subject, this whole concept of gender has been very much in the news over the past few years, not only in discussion around the coffee machine or the water cooler, but even in state legislatures and even at the federal level in Washington, D.C. And I would say generally in the past 5 years, would you say that time frame is right?
Yes. The civil rights movement around transgender activism really got going in the 1990s, but more and more, you know, gained momentum, and it's really, I think you're right, within the last 5 or so years that it's really come to the public forefront as an issue that that a lot of people are discussing in a lot of different venues, as you point out.
So in your book, you say that it's time to rethink the entire usefulness of dividing the world into just male and female. You don't think we need to do that anymore?
Well, I think that we need to ask the question, which is in the title of the book, Does Gender Matter? And in the book, I draw a distinction between our use of gender in our personal lives to identify personally, and also in the way that we interact socially. I do think that gender is still relevant and important in a lot of those ways. But when it comes to policies, and specifically administrative policies, which are the kind of policies that govern public restrooms, for example, and government-issued identification documents, driver's licenses, birth certificates, passports, all the way up to things like sex segregation in sports, which we take for granted as something that we need. So I think that we should ask the question, and when we ask the question, in a lot of instances, I find, at least in my own research, that we don't need to invoke gender or sex in policies. And then sometimes we do, and then when we need to, or when we think it's relevant, my argument is that we need to explain why, and to offer a definition of gender, which we take for granted that everybody knows what we're talking about, but in reality, a lot of us have different ideas of what gender means.
Well, this is an interesting thing to talk about, Heath Fogg Davis, although I must tell you, I'm sure that we have a number of listeners, and you've probably run into this before, a number of listeners who are kind of shaking their heads and saying, well, what? Most of us have known since we were born whether we were male or female. We don't have any problem navigating the gender categories that we see all around us.
Yes, I think you're right. And I think it's true that for the majority of people, the sex that they were assigned at birth is the same sex that they continue to identify with throughout the course of their life. But that's not true for everyone. And so given that we know that there are, at least at this point, a numerical minority of people who identify as transgender, and also people who are born with intersex conditions, which means that people who are born with not dyadic sex. So we're talking about things like chromosomes, hormones, physiological features that that can't be neatly divided into male or female. So we are talking about a minority in terms of the experience of being transgender or intersex. But my point is that number one, we shouldn't let the experience of the majority trample the civil rights of those in the minority. And number two, there are a lot of ways in which current sex classification policies actually don't help and can hinder people who are not transgender or intersex. So you take the example of public restrooms. Yes, for many transgender people, those pose a big problem. Although I should point out it's not true that they pose a problem for everybody. So for gender-conforming trans people that don't appear to be trans, they can use the sex-segregated bathrooms without a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But coming back to the point about how it might impact other people, for example, you know, if you go to any, you can witness the long lines and for women's bathrooms in a lot of venues, which tells us that there's a disparity there in terms of the amount of time that women have to wait to use a public restroom versus men. And that has everything to do with how we build and design public restrooms. And my point in the book is that we should actually build no-gender bathrooms very, very differently, so that you give people their individual privacy. You build, you know, individual toilet stalls with wall, you know, ceiling-to-floor partitions, so people have their privacy and their safety. And then you have a common area of sinks and mirrors where there's no need for sex segregation. Mm-hmm. And this is something that's actually been implemented in some cities, in some restaurants. Here in Philadelphia, we have quite a few. And people generally don't even notice that there's anything really different, and they certainly don't feel disadvantaged.
I've seen this in a few other places, actually in a couple of European countries, where the restrooms are gender neutral. However, they're usually small and, you know, usually lock the door when you go in. I've not seen large-scale construction like you're describing, but of course that's part of what you talk about in your book, right? Maybe we need to rethink these things.
Yes, I think so. And for me, the whole debate about public restrooms really boils down to an architectural issue. So, and there are some architects who are sort of offering innovative designs to make public restrooms better for everyone. So, you know, getting back to the point about how the majority of us are impacted by sex segregation, you could think also of parents in the public sphere with children of a different sex. So I have a daughter, a two-year-old daughter, so when I go out in public with her, I have to violate the policy of sex segregation when I bring her into a men's restroom to change her diaper. And this is true also with adult caregivers of people who might have, you know, need for assistance in using public restrooms. It applies to teachers who are on field trips with their classes when they have to navigate the sex segregated bathrooms. So we can see when you start to unpack it that the current way that we do things really isn't working for a lot of people. So it's not just a transgender issue.
Our guest, listeners, for those of you who may have joined us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, that's fine. Our guest is Heath Fogg Davis. He joins us by telephone. He's the author of Beyond Trans, Does Gender Matter? A recently published book. Heath Fogg Davis, incidentally, is an associate professor of political science at Temple University. He mentioned Philadelphia a little bit earlier. And he's also the author of The Ethics of Transracial Adoption, and he's a scholar activist whose work in classrooms, boardrooms, and community centers seeks to alleviate discrimination and inequality. We have a few more minutes that we're able to chat with Heath Fogg Davis. We need to take a quick break here, so let's do that. We'll pick up our conversation here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. Hey, folks, have you heard of DBS Telecommunications? We certainly have here at WISR. DBS Telecommunications is a telephone equipment dealer and a data network installer, and they serve the entire Butler and the Pittsburgh area, too. They sell, they install, and they repair telephones for your office. They primarily install commercial telephone and voicemail systems. DBS Telecommunications has been serving the Butler area for the past 32 years. They specialize in phone systems, in custom-designed networks, including fiber optics, the latest. They specialize in high-quality hybrid digital telephone systems with 5-year warranties, by the way. They specialize in high-definition surveillance camera systems, more and more important these days. They specialize in multi-door entry access systems and overhead commercial paging as well. They also provide cabling for voice, for data, and for cable television wiring in both industrial and commercial applications. Here at the Butler Radio Network, WISR, and our sister station, we use DBS Telecommunications. We know them well. Call them today for more information. DBS, phone number is 724-285-9088. 724-285-9088. And they're on the web at dbs-tel.com. dbs-tel.com. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Welcome back. Chatting with Heath Fogg Davis today about his recently published book, Beyond Trans, Does Gender Matter? We concentrated a lot on restrooms because that's been in the news. Quite frankly, it's even been in the news legislatively. One of the southern states, it was North Carolina, where there was great controversy over legislation that they passed, and then they started to lose. They lost NCAA basketball tournaments and stuff like that. North Carolina, right? Right, Heath?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah. Yes.
That's one issue. Restrooms. What about, because I know you discussed this in your book, what about sports? Sex-segregated sports. My inclination is that most people, at least at first blush, if this is brought up for discussion, would say, well, yeah, but there are not just physical sex characteristic differences, but there are structural body differences between genders. It would be unfair to have a woman compete against a man in certain sports. And then there were others, parents who might be concerned about this happening at the high school level. You don't agree with that?
Well, the case study on sports in the book is the final one, and so it's the last chapter, and it's there for a reason. I think it's the toughest case that I deal with. So in the book, I start with what I think is the most straightforward and working up to the most complicated, and I start with identity documents, so driver's licenses and birth certificates and passports, where the goal is to verify that we are who we say we are in situations where the prospect of identity fraud is high.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gender markers don't serve a good purpose there. And in fact, we are starting to see some changes there. Oregon and California are poised to remove gender markers from some of these documents. But yeah, but getting back to your point, the sports issue, I think, is the hardest one. Because sex-related physiological features, as you said, impact strength and endurance, and those two things are often, not always, but often very relevant to the competitive advantage. So I think, you know, when I talk about in the book, I think we have to talk about specific sports and ask what the relevant policy goals are and start to think through these things at different levels. So I think at a recreational level, does it make sense for, 5 and 6 year old kids to be segregated according to sex? I know we have to ask the question. And then when we're talking about elite competition like the Olympics, and Division I and NCAA competition, where the stakes are higher, there are different questions to ask. So I don't pretend to have all the answers to the questions that I raise in the book, but I think that we have to ask them.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the International Olympic Committee has gone through a lot of different testing of sex over the years, and it used to be very a pretty horrible scenario where it was just female athletes being tested and actually being physically inspected by physicians beforehand. Now the current policy is that any person who wants to compete as female in the Olympics has to pass a test measuring the amount of functional testosterone in their bodies. So that's interesting because there's no equivalent test that's given to male athletes who want to compete as male. So there's an asymmetry there.
I would perhaps, you mentioned that elite levels, NCAA, or certainly professional levels. I would go lower, though, Heath Fogg Davis. I was in high school before Title IX. I think it was just prior to Title IX being passed. And there were very limited opportunities for girls, young females, to compete in sports. Because in the sports that were available then, physically, they were unable to win a spot on a team. And Title IX, which created equal opportunities for women, was a godsend. I don't know, here in the western part of the state nowadays, in many sports, basketball would certainly be one. The girls outshine the boys, quite frankly, in terms of being competitive and you know, having great records year in and year out. I'm not sure that would happen if we didn't have sex segregated sports at the high school level. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you make a series of really important points, and I think that Title IX was very needed, and it's produced a lot of opportunities for girls and women to participate in sports, and I'm all for that. But there's a question of whether, so, you know, the issue of equal opportunity, that's very, very important. There's a question about how we get to equal opportunity, though. Does it always mean creating a separate sport for girls and women? If you think about Little League Baseball, there were some important lawsuits going all the way back to like the 1950s and 60s around trying to integrate girls into Little League. That finally happened, but at the same time, there was the creation of the sport of softball. It was marketed directly to girls. Mm-hmm. And my question is, did we need that? You know, was that a necessary thing to create a different sport with a different size baseball and a different set of rules? I don't know. I mean, I think it's important to understand the historical development because it can seem today that what we have is what we absolutely needed to have, and I think we could have taken a different direction.
What about, and this has occurred actually, the only reason I'm bringing it up, is high school wrestling. There are many high schools that don't have girls' wrestling teams, and there are controversies when girls wrestle with boys, and I'm not talking about this TV, you know, fake wrestling. I'm talking about the real high school and collegiate sport. There are moves that are made. There are holds that are made that many parents of either teenage boys or girls would not want their sons or daughters making with another person on the wrestling mat. You understand what I mean there?
I do. I do. And there are two things that come to mind with that. I think, one is, you know, you're talking about certain moves and you're talking about sort of, you know, bodies together in ways that we might not be comfortable with. But I think in making a statement like that, there's an assumption that everybody's heterosexual, so if the underlying concern is about sexuality, then that's, you know, then why do we allow boys to wrestle with each other? Presumably not every boy that wrestles is heterosexual, and so I think that's an important thing to sort of query. And then the other thing is that if you're going to have sex-segregated sports or any kind of sex segregation policy, then I think you have to define what you mean by sex. And so and this is relevant. Again, it goes back to our discussion earlier. For the majority of people, these are not questions that they have to ask or think about. But for other people, they are. So what about a transgender boy who wants to compete on the boys' wrestling team in high school? You know, what's the criteria? Does that transgender boy have to physically appear to be a boy? What about the student who identifies as gender fluid? So we haven't really talked about that, but there are people who identify as neither male nor female. How would they fit into that? Where's the equal opportunity for them? So again, there's like an approach to assimilate into the existing sex binary, or we could question that sex binary in the first place, and maybe we could kind of come up with a different solution.
I appreciate the opportunity to discuss this. We need to do this more, and our time begins to run short. I have to ask you about one more thing, though, before we run out of time, because you talk about single-sex colleges. I might add single-sex high schools. You're not in favor of those? You don't think we should have those?
It's a little bit more of a complicated answer than that. I actually think that the historical and ongoing mission of a lot of women's colleges, for example, and those are the majority, mm-hmm. there are just three men's private colleges that exist today, that the mission is very important. It's about gender equity, about giving young women leadership opportunities that they don't necessarily have in a co-ed environment. But I think they should retain the mission, but I think that they should that they really have to, in a sense, to be compliant with Title IX, in my opinion, open their admissions to everyone. So you retain the goal so that men who want to join, you know, apply to a women's college like Mount Holyoke or Wellesley or something like that, understand that they're coming into an environment where, number one, they'll likely be in the minority, and also that the goals are specifically feminist, in a sense. So that, you know, and it's kind of a fine line, I know, to kind of draw there, but I think it's important.
What about at the high school level? There aren't too many, but there are still all boys and all girls high schools, and there are people who argue very strongly in favor of those philosophically.
Right, right. And a lot of those arguments in favor of sex-segregated high schools have to do with, the arguments that, for example, and a lot of this also involves race. So, like schools for African American mm-hmm. boys in particular, there's an argument that they will do better scholastically in those environments. But the research is really mixed, you know, when you look at this stuff. So, it's not clear whether there's a clear benefit or not. And again, there's an assumption also that those environments will benefit all boys, when we know that, you know, not every boy is going to be heterosexual, and again, what about the student who might be gender non-conforming in some way, or even transgender? So thinking about how to make those environments welcoming and equal for those students is really difficult. So my argument is, how can we change the structure to benefit everybody?
Folks, I've had to scratch the surface here, quite frankly, because of time limitations. But in Heath Fogg Davis's book, Beyond Trans, Does Gender Matter? He goes into a lengthy discussion of several areas that we've touched on. Chapters include the sex markers we carry, sex-marked identity documents, sex-segregated restrooms, checking a sex box to get into college, and also sex-segregated sports. We tried to at least touch on all of these much more obviously in your book. Is your book just out, Heath?
Yes, yes. It came out in early June.
Nice to talk about these things, and perhaps that's the most important thing, huh? We open up discussion about it, if nothing else?
Absolutely. If I accomplish that goal with this book, then I will have done my job. I think that to get people talking about these issues and develop some pragmatic strategies for making policies more trans-inclusive.
The title again, Beyond Trans, Does Gender Matter? By Heath Fogg Davis. He has been our guest. Thank you, Heath. Nice to talk with you today. Thanks for sharing some time with us.
I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Sure. So long now.
Bye.
Heath Fogg Davis, an associate professor at Temple in Philadelphia. Well, interesting to talk about. I'm not sure that I can agree with everything that Heath Fogg Davis is proposing, but then, you know, that's why you have civil discussion, right? You talk about these things. The concept of, you know, why do we specify gender on certain documents? Okay, I guess that's thinking out of the box, you know. On the other hand, on your driver's license, they ask you, for example, what color are your eyes, right? Right? Isn't it on your driver's license? Blue or brown? I think your height is on there. Your weight, I don't know. I haven't looked at mine in a while. that's for identification purposes, right? So that if you're stopped for questioning, for example, or even just a traffic violation, a police officer could see, you know, right away that if you had the wrong eye color and you were 5'2" and the license said you were 7'6", that there was something fishy here, you know, that you were using someone else's license, you were using a stolen license. In terms of gender identity, well, again, when you're coming at it from a standpoint of, you know, most of us, as I told Heath, you know, most of us know from the moment we're born, you know, whether we're male or female. I can empathize with individuals who are not sure on that. You know, I don't have any experience with it, but I can empathize where that might be a problem. But, you know. Do you start talking about how large a percentage of the population is that? Does that make a difference? Or shouldn't it make a difference? And then the concept of, so that's on identity papers, you know, for your driver's license, for example. And then this whole question of restrooms, I think that's most fascinating for me. Why not have large restroom facilities in public buildings that are, obviously you would need privacy cubicles that were completely private, not just a, you know, steel door like they are in most restrooms today, but a private area, and then just a common area with sinks and mirrors. I mean that's never been the way we did it, but I suppose there is definitely an issue if you go to a stadium or a gymnasium or anywhere. There's always a longer line for women to get into the restroom at halftime or intermission than there is at the men's room. Everybody's known that. I guess I could explore that possibility. It would be a different way of thinking, but that's what he's talking about. I think the biggest problem I would have is in sports. You know, if you have a high school daughter or son, for that matter, you know, would you want them wrestling someone of the opposite sex? I don't think so. That would be a real problem. And no sex, no gender differentiation in sport. That's hard for me. I mean, if you've ever seen, let's say, professional golfers, for example, most of those women, some of them are extremely petite. They're tiny. Now, they can play golf, but they could never hit it as far as some of these, you know, big guys on the men's professional tour. Would that be fair for them to try to compete? I tried to suggest that what would happen is that it would be like before Title IX. The women would eventually just be shut out. They wouldn't be able to win a spot on the team. I don't know. I certainly don't consider myself a biased or a prejudiced person. I just think that seems kind of common sense to me. But, oh, well. Hey, it's good to talk about it. And, you know, we do that on this program. Gets us thinking, I suppose, huh? And we appreciate being able to chat with Heath Fogg Davis. Yeah, certainly some thought starters there in that conversation. Well, there's more to come on the It's Your Turn program here coming up shortly. Our final guest of the day, we're going to be talking about multitasking, not so much from, trying to read a book while you're watching TV, while you're painting the living room, not that kind of multitasking, but multitasking more from a career standpoint or a job standpoint. Our guest will be Emily Wepnick, and she says maybe that's not so bad. And she talks about some pretty famous people in history who have done just that. So we'll chat with her coming up here in just a moment or so. On the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have some open talk time. We'll also explore with a guest the narrow line between life and death. Adrian Owen will chat with us about that. Should be interesting. Mm-hmm. That's on tomorrow's program. Coming up on, is it Monday? We're talking with Peter Anna. I think it is on Monday. A native of this area, Harmony, I believe, who recently returned from Antarctica. I don't think I ever talked with anybody who's back from Antarctica before. And we'll find out why he was there. I don't know. You can't. Can you just take a trip to Antarctica? Like, for an adventure vacation? I'm not sure. Was he there on some sort of a scientific mission? I don't know. But I'm anxious to chat with him. He'll be with us on the Monday program. Also on Monday, details on a bicycle rodeo that's coming up here in the city. I guess they're going to be giving away lots and lots of bicycles to kids. So we'll get details on that on the Monday program as well. We'll take a break here and then chat with Emily Wapnick. She's with us next on the It's Your Turn program. One of our sponsors is the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. They're almost ready to begin their Saturday collection of excess fresh vegetables and produce from your garden. If you have any, extra tomatoes. I mean, those things go bad. You can't keep them forever. And you can only give so many to Aunt Minnie, right? Or the next door neighbor. And sometimes all of this stuff comes on at once and, consider donating to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. It's a tremendous boost for their food cupboard and for the people and the families who rely on that. They'll start collecting Saturday, July 15th, so it's a couple of Saturdays down the road. You can take your excess to the St. Michael's School Hall behind St. Michael's Church on Saturday morning, Center Avenue, Saturday mornings, starting July 15th. And don't forget, when you're doing cleaning, spring or summer cleaning, and you've got excess items that you don't need or want anymore, maybe if it's clothing, it doesn't fit anymore, consider donating those items to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store. It's in the Greater Butler Mart, Route 8 South. Tons of free parking right at the door. It's very easy to drop things off. They like to say we stand tallest when we stoop to help others. The Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler.
Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way. Getting there starts here. Just hop the bus. Easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem. The bus will get you there. 'Cause that's what we do.
Hop the bus.
Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
Listeners, interesting conversation coming up on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. If you're just joining us, my name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest visits with us by telephone for this segment. She is Emily Wapnick, the author of How to Be Everything. Well, that's an intriguing title, is it not? Emily, hi. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
I know there are a lot of folks. I've got to be honest with you. I'm one of them. I tend to be a multitasker. In my life, I get started on one project and then something else gets started and I never seem to quite get done. Now, that can be a problem just in your everyday life. But boy, if you're trying to decide on a career or what you want to be when you grow up, that can lead to a real mess, can it, Emily?
Yeah, so I like to distinguish between multitasking and what I call being a multi-potentialite. So when you're multitasking, you're like not really doing one thing at a time. You know, you've got like five things that you're trying to do at once.
Mm-hmm.
A multi-potentialite is someone with many passions and creative pursuits. So it's not that we have trouble focusing or that we try and do a million things at any given time. We just are curious about a lot of different areas. And so often in our careers, we have like three or four different jobs or businesses that we run like by choice, or maybe we kind of shift between one career to another every like 5-10 years or whatever that pattern looks like. But it basically means that we don't want to have one thing that we do for our whole lives.
Mm-hmm. And you're saying that that's fine for certain people. They can do that and have a very successful and satisfying life.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we grow up in this culture where we're taught that if you do many things, you're going to be bad at all of them. And so mm-hmm. we need to specialize. And there's this like false dichotomy between these two things. And actually what you find is that many people are very good at several things and can do several things professionally and have that financial stability at the same time. So there are a lot of people like, you know, there isn't this kind of contrast, like either you pick one thing or you're poor. Like actually what we're seeing now, especially now with the way that things are changing in the economy, is that it's very possible to do many things and to thrive at the same time.
This could perhaps sort of dovetail with, I just saw a study within the past couple of months about an examination of careers. And if you go back a generation or certainly two, you know, the classic example was an individual who, you know, started in one career and stayed there until he or she retired. I mean, that's what they were. Nowadays, there are many, many more people who will end up, you know, at the end of their working lives having had 4, 5, 6 different careers, and that's becoming much more commonplace.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the average American is supposed to change jobs every like 4.2 years or something, and have 11. I think that's the number over the course of their entire career, like their entire lives. So yeah, it's becoming a lot more common. And you know, there's like negative reasons for this as well, right? Like people are finding that it's harder to get that job security if that's what you want. You know, if you want to be at one company for your whole career, that is becoming increasingly more difficult to find.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you, on the flip side, if you're someone who has a lot of different passions and doesn't want to just do one thing, this is a really interesting time to be out there working because you've got all these new opportunities with technology. You can work remotely. You can start a business, you know, from your laptop. You can self-publish a book. There's like, we're really redefining the way that we work, and that's scary but also exciting.
The title, again, listeners, of Emily Wapnick's book is How to Be Everything. And if there would be a better person to write such a book, I don't know who that person would be, because, Emily, you kind of fit into this category that we've been discussing here. You were unable to settle on a single path, and you studied, my goodness, music, art, film production, and law, eventually graduating from the law faculty at McGill University. So you know of what you speak, I guess, huh?
Yeah, so this is my journey. So I've always had a lot of passions and interests, and I was kind of worried what I would eventually end up doing. I thought I'd just have to like pick one thing and eventually become bored, and or that I would jump from job to job and like never have financial stability and just always be kind of struggling financially. And so I really set out on this quest to figure out if there was a way to do many things and to to like be able to pay the bills at the same time. And
mm-hmm.
that's what led me to start blogging about this and seeking out other people who are doing many things and learning from them and interviewing people. And what I've learned is that, yeah, it's totally possible to have a multifaceted career where you get to explore and you get to learn and still like be financially comfortable at the same time.
Emily is a career coach. She blogs on this. She's a community leader, and I'm sure you can also tell she is a good speaker. In fact, she delivered a TED Talk entitled, Why Some of Us Don't Have One True Calling. And it's been viewed over 3.5 million times, for goodness sakes, translated into 36 languages. I think you've struck a chord here, Emily.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, like, when they hear the TED Talk or they learn about multi-potentialites and what that means, they think, like, oh my gosh, I thought there was something wrong with me. I thought I was just weird, but actually I'm a multi-potentialite, and there are lots of people out there like this. And so, yeah, it seems to be resonating.
So tell me a little bit about what people will find in your book. That would include several things that multi-potentialites do extremely well. Can you mention some of those, Emily?
Yeah, so we've got several superpowers, as I call them. We're really good at idea synthesis, so combining two fields or ideas that don't normally go together and creating something new at the intersection, which is really important for innovation and for problem solving. We're very creative. We're really quick learners because we've had so much practice picking things up, and we also, when we become interested in something, we tend to be really passionate and we dive in and kind of absorb everything we can. We're big picture thinkers, so we're able to kind of see patterns and zoom out, and we tend to be kind of visionaries and have big ideas. We are really good at relating to people from different walks of life because we've had all these different experiences, and we're very curious and interested. And we're also good at translating between experts who might be speaking different languages. So let's say you're leading a big interdisciplinary team, and there are programmers on the team, and there are designers. You can kind of, they speak very different languages, so you can sort of understand them both and translate between them. So these are just a few of our superpowers.
And she goes into, listeners, obviously, a much more depth on each of these areas in her book. And I just want to pick one. I've opened the book here. I've got a review copy to page 40, and you're talking about money, key points about money. Certainly, if you want to build a career supporting multi-potentiality, it's going to take some time, but you can do it. You point out that the amount of money that people need to live varies dramatically from person to person, and it's certainly only one ingredient in a happy life, Emily. Don't focus exclusively on money.
Hmm? Yeah, and I think this is where some career advice goes wrong. We focus just on, like, finding something profitable, and that's important. Like, I'm not saying we need to be starving artists or anything, but it is one factor, and not everything you do needs to produce income for you to, you know, for that activity to be valid. You need to be able to meet your financial needs and your financial goals. And at the same time, like, you can, you know, you want to prioritize things that are meaningful, and you want to prioritize variety if you're a multi-potentialite. So it's about kind of getting the right level of those three factors: money, meaning, and variety. And maybe that will all come from one job, or maybe you'll split them up and you'll do something that pays the bills that you enjoy enough, but then you'll have a whole bunch of projects and hobbies on the side, and that will enrich your life in other ways, and so you'll get the variety and just about, you know, having those three things overall in your life.
Mm-hmm. And you have different strategies and models that you outline in here. One that caught my attention straight away was the Einstein approach. Just take a second and talk a little bit about that. When we hear the name Einstein, what do we think about? You know, his work in physics and theoretical physics and so on. Actually, for about 10 years earlier in his life, he was a patent officer for the Swiss government, wasn't he?
He was, yeah, and he didn't get paid for his theories. He did those. He developed those on the side. So for this book, I really wanted to understand how multi-potentialites make a living. And I, like you said, I kind of was able to group things into these four work models, and the Einstein approach is one of them. And so people who use the Einstein approach, they'll have what author Barbara Sher calls a good enough job. And it's, you know, it pays the bills. You shouldn't hate it, right? Like you should enjoy what you're doing. You should genuinely be interested. But maybe it doesn't involve it doesn't involve all of your passions and skills. And so what you do is you have this stable day job that pays the bills. but it leaves you with enough free time and energy to pursue your many passions on the side, kind of like the way Einstein developed his theories on the side and wasn't paid for them initially. And so overall, yeah, you've got your passion projects, you're making enough money. I interviewed a guy named Charlie Harper, who's an IT manager by day, but then when he leaves the office, he goes to musical theater practice, and he sings in an a cappella group, and on the weekends he builds furniture, and he had just built a boat. So that's just one example. And then there are other multi-potentialites who do get paid for their many things, and those are some of the other work models.
There have been some very famous multi-potentialites. They probably wouldn't have known that particular name or that word down through history. Einstein was certainly one of them. Do you mention any others in your book, Emily?
Yeah, I've got so it was an interesting balance because I could have written extensively about them in the book, but I wanted the examples in the book to be relatable. I didn't want people to be like, oh, well, Ben Franklin can do it because he's Ben Franklin, but like, so I have an appendix at the end where I go through a number of famous multi-potentialites, everyone from Leonardo da Vinci to Steve Jobs to Patti Smith, James Franco. There are a lot of people who explore many different fields and have had projects or done work in multiple disciplines over the course of history and today as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of them, obviously, many of these names we'd recognize. Steve Jobs would certainly fall into that category. Mm-hmm. One that you mentioned is interesting, Beatrix Potter. She's best known as the author of the children's book, The Tale of Peter Rabbit. I happen to know a little bit about her because I interviewed one of her biographers a couple of years ago who wrote about her life, and that's when I found out that she was not only a good writer, but an extremely talented artist and illustrator as well.
Mm-hmm. And didn't she had a farm, right? She was really into, like, sheep breeding?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, rather incredible career, much apart from being a writer. Yeah. And there are many other famous multi-potentialites that Emily mentions in her, well, that's an appendix or something at the end of your book, right?
Yeah. And I maybe bring them up a little bit throughout the book, but I really wanted, so a lot of people hear about the idea of multi-potentialites, multi-potentiality, and they're like, okay, that's great, but like, I'm not Steve Jobs, like, I'm not rich, like, I'm not a genius, and so I just wanted to have, like, regular people mostly in the book. But, yeah, there's an appendix at the end with the famous ones.
I have one more question for you. What's Putty Like? That's a website? Or what is that, Putty Like?
Yeah. Putty Like is my blog for multi-potentialites, where we talk about different issues that we face, different challenges, and how to deal with those. And it kind of, the word came from just some brainstorming where I was like, you know, putty, it's like it changes shape, it's malleable, it's flexible. Like, I think that might be a good metaphor for us. So we're putty like, and that's where that came from. But yeah, it's a blog.
Mm-hmm. Is that available to the general public?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's, I don't know, like 400 blog posts up there from, I started blogging in 2010, so there's quite a bit up there, and it's all free and open to everyone.
Is your book just published, Emily?
It is. It came out in May.
Mm-hmm. The title, listeners, if you joined us a little bit late, How to Be Everything, a guide for those who still don't know what they want to be when they grow up. I love your subtitle, Emily.
Thank you.
Emily Wapnick visiting with us from far away. You're in British Columbia, for goodness sakes, aren't you?
I am, yeah. Other side of the country. Well, other, different country. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Other side of the continent, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Emily, nice to chat with you today. Appreciate the time. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Great talking with you.
Okay. Yeah, so long now.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 7676. The pick 3, 980, 980. The pick 4, 1917. The pick 5, 98462. Wild ball for each of those is 3. The treasure hunt is 2, 22, 28, 29, and 30. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Moving from my home of 50 years was a little scary, but I wasn't safe at home anymore, and my daughter with her busy life, children and grandchildren, it wasn't fair for me to expect so much from her.
We looked together to find a new home and discovered New Haven Court at Clearview.
What made the difference were the employees and the residents we met. The residents said it was a great place to live.
New Haven Court at Clearview, a great place to live because it's a great place to work. 888-261-5753 or visit IntegraCare.com.
Whether you're a backyard car fixer-upper or an auto repair shop, Milich Auto Wrecking is still the place to go for new and used auto and truck parts. They have been for over 40 years. And compared to factory prices, you'll save big bucks. Milich Auto Wrecking is neatly organized and will tell you immediately if they have the part or not. Open Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5, it's Milich Auto Wrecking, Route 38, the Oneida Valley Road. Look for the big black and red sign. Stop by or call 287-1001. And yes,